Freight Up.
Hello and welcome back to Freight Up, the freight and commodity podcast of Freight Investor Services. I'm Jess, and together with Davide, we'll be your hosts as we navigate our major freight and bulk commodity markets. We are here with another episode and a couple of special guests this time.
Hello from me too. So today we have our experts, Haupe and Archie Smith, that will give us their analysis, respectively, on the state of the iron ore and fuel oil markets. But we will also be talking about battery metals, as we are going to be joined by ABAX Commodity Futures Exchange and Clearinghouse Chief Commercial Officer, Joe Raya, and the Head of Battery Metals, Sasha Lifshitz. As usual, let's start with the macro news of the past 2 weeks.
The US unemployment rate rose from 4.1% in February, up from 4% in January, slightly exceeding market expectations. Core consumer prices, which exclude food and energy, increased by 0.2% month over month in February, down from a 10-month high of 0.4% in the previous month and below market expectations of a 0.3% rise. On an annual basis, core consumer price inflation eased to 3.1% in February, down from 3.3% in January and below the anticipated 3.2%.
In China, consumer prices fell by 0.7% year on year in February, surpassing market estimates of a 0.5% decline and reversing a 0.5% increase in January. These mark the first instance of consumer deflation since January 2024 and is driven by fading seasonal demand following the Spring Festival in late January. Industrial production, still in China, expanded by 5.9% year over year in the combined period of January and February, exceeding market forecast of a 5.3% rise but slowing from a 6.2% growth in December. Retail sales grew by 4% year-on-year in the first 2 months of 2025, up from 3.7% in December and in line with market expectations. This was the strongest retail turnover growth since October 2024, supported by increased consumer spending during the Spring Festival celebrations. But what are the market movements of the past 2 weeks? Let's have a quick look. Capesize have shown a steady rise over the past 2 weeks, with the C5TC climbing from $16,328 on the 4th of March to $22,507 yesterday. Panamaxes also saw gains, increasing from $9,218 2 weeks ago to $9,578 on the 11th of March, and further to $12,643 on the 18th. Supramaxes experienced a more mixed trend, with the S10TC dipping from $9,035 2 weeks ago to $8,890 on the 11th, before rebounding to $10,313 on the 18th of March. Lastly, also handy sizes have 2 positive weeks, with the HS7TC rising from $9,860 on the 4th to $10,412 yesterday.
Next, we have Haupe here to fill us in on the ferrous market over the last reporting period. So, Hal, there's been a lot of movement recently. We've seen sharp rebounds and then quick pullbacks. What's been driving this movement?
There is a bit of volatility on the iron ore market instead of buck range back and forth for a couple of weeks. So basically, the iron ore price were surprised by the news of crude steel restriction in China. And the rumor said there were about 15 million tons of steel cut, which is equal to 4.2% of the total production base in 2024 in China. Then the market priced in this rumor. And since there was hardly any source to prove, and the news was on and off the market for many weeks, in fact. So, which drive the iron ore price back again. And from macro side, I think both U.S. equity market and the dollar stabilized after significant corrections. But there is new Mideast conflict. We see some escalation on it. And the gold price exceeds 30, 40 now per ounce. So it's hitting all-time high. And overall risk hedging trades were once on the rise. And on China's side, the government has begun to increase support for trading goods and taken a couple of practical measures to stabilize the stock market. And the Shanghai Composite Index opened at 3,430 points on Monday, hitting a new year high. However, I think the bearish side was the floor area of newly started buildings decreased by 29.6 with a significant decline of 6.6. So from market perspective, the impact outweighed the positive effects of narrowing decline housing sales and accelerating in infrastructure growth. And I think on the fundamental side, the arrivals of iron ore were huge last week, and however, offset by the fast decreasing port inventories. And demand side should be sustainable as pig iron should pick up from this week after environmental curb and after China conference, and as well as heavy pollution weathers. And in general, I think the market was back to peace. And however, physical volume picked as the coming of China construction season. So I think should see some floor area near 95 to 97 instead of all the way to the tops.
All right, got it. So there's some mixed signals there. So if we move towards coking coal, do you think this recent price correlation is going to last?
The coking coal market internationally was tanking all over the globe during the past week. I think from China's side, it is hard to generate some extra buying interest on the international side because of massive clearance of coals from Mongolia border. And for Indian end users, they were generally not addicted to the PLVs because of the grade is not the normally use into the blast furnace. But I think Australian miners could only rely on PMVs. So I think the general latency of March and April were crowded and a glut was significant on the Australian coking coal market. So in general, on fundamental side, it's bearish. However, I think the valuation is low. And some of the Indian mills indicated that they will buy if the index level around 160 to 165, which is only $5 below the current level. So I think the price floor is coming soon. Mm-hmm. I don't think the price is going like there'll be a huge directional movement in the next few weeks.
Okay, interesting. So something for people to look out for then?
Yeah, I think it's worth to see if there are any spectral trades on the PMB market from Indian end users in the coming days. If there are, like, we should probably focus on how much volume on it. If the volume is becoming higher, then probably the real demand is coming. And I think that's all we should take a look.
All right. Thank you for that, Hao.
Thank you.
And now let's talk about fuel oil with Archie Smith. Let's look at the crude market. I mean, the activity has been like quite range bound over the past weeks. So maybe you can tell us more about the reasons behind this kind of like range bound activity.
Yeah, sure. So front month Brent futures been pretty stuck between the 70 and 72 mark, just sort of been playing ping pong between those two levels. Admittedly, this morning we have just slightly sort of dipped under that 70 level to sort of 69.90 around there. Yeah, overall, those are sort of levels we're testing at the minute. Everyone's just sort of looking to a few factors. I mean, obviously, you've got the Trump-Putin calls that are happening. I know there was one yesterday regarding Ukraine war truce. It looks as though there's steps in the right direction, but ultimately a full-on sort of end to the war seems quite a way off. I think even sort of as that progresses, I would say myself that Ukraine-Russia is so sort of well-priced into the market anyway that I think to see a major and sort of lasting price movement in crude coming off the back of that, it would have to be literally an all-out end to the war. So something as dramatic as that to sort of affect the prices there. Forcing us down a little bit, you've got all the sort of trade protectionism that's come in the last weeks all across the globe. Obviously, Trump spearheaded that and there's been a lot of retaliation from China, Canada, Europe. Trade protectionism, tariffs, etc. overall is pretty bearish for global oil demand. So that's sort of one of our bearish factors. But then propping us up, I suppose you could say, is again, tensions again in the Middle East. I know obviously there was a ceasefire in Gaza that seems to have ended unofficially. I know there were some strikes. And as well, even in Russia, Ukraine, while these talks are going on, there's still strikes either side. So the tensions are still there keeping us up, and the sort of trade protectionism and ceasefire talks and that is on the bearish side. So yeah, I mean, in that being said, I'd say overall still pretty bearish, because if you look at the end of February, we were trading around $76, $77 a barrel. And then we sort of sharply dropped at the end of Feb into the start of March when OPEC said that they was going to still go ahead with their output resumption. Pretty range bound. I think we need something to happen to break us out of this little $2 bracket at the minute.
And looking more specifically at the fuel oil, you have mentioned some of the news. I mean, like, it's very difficult sometimes to actually, you know, like, follow up, like, all the things that are happening, because they seem to be happening all at the same time. There's, like, 100%. Quite a lot of stuff that is happening.
Yes.
And then, of course, like, it has an influence on the market. So, like, on the fuel oil, how do you see the market reacting to this flurry of different news?
I mean, overall, fuel oil is soft at the minute. It really is. I mean, if you're looking at, like, the 0.5 flat price, that's all got a four handle now. You know, sort of front month, Singapore 0.5 is trading like $490. And even sort of 0.5 spreads, yes, the curve is backwardated, but not massively, particularly in the Sing 0.5. The April, May Sing 0.5 spread is so tight at the minute, it's bouncing between $1 and $1.50.
Which is quite narrow in terms of, like,
massively, especially historically for a front month spread like that.
Mm.
Yeah, you're looking at, I mean, I don't know the sort of average off the top of my head, but normally like $8, $9, $10. So, and it's, normally what we see is when it gets this low, you get people, okay, this is a great time to buy it at sort of $1 this tight, and then it breaks out. But we're really, I don't know, people seem to be sitting on their hands.
So wait and see approach. This is what
I think so. I really do think so. I don't think anyone wants to be the first one to make the move when there's sort of so much up in the air with regards to global conflicts, global trade kind of thing. And obviously global trade really does directly affect the fuel markets, because at the end of the day, it's the fuel that's going in the into these ships that are moving commodities around the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the cracks are coming a little bit softer. Obviously the flat price offs, the east-west, both on the 0.5 and the high sulfur is tightening up. So a bit of a soft market. Yeah, then again, you could argue a great opportunity to take advantage of sort of back-end low prices in the back-end Q4, Cal 26, etc., which we are seeing some of the shipping guys do while it's so low, and hedging their exposure for back-end stuff whilst it's so cheap.
Thank you very much, Archie.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
So next up, we're joined by Joe, the COO, and Sasha, the head of battery metals at ABEX. Hello, guys.
Hello, Jessica. Hi, I'm David. Hey.
It's good to have you here. ABEX is a Singaporean exchange that centrally clears physically delivered contracts for LNG, battery metals, carbon. And today, Joe and Sasha will discuss the launch of their new lithium carbonate product and what that impact is for the evolving battery metals market. So for those of you who are not familiar with this industry, lithium is a key component in lithium-ion batteries, which power everything from electric vehicles to larger scale energy storage. So given its high reactivity and volatility, lithium is often processed into a stable compound. So this can be lithium hydroxide or lithium carbonate in this case. As always, you can find out a little bit more about our battery metals reporting on FIS Live. But for now, we're excited to have Joe and Sasha with us here today to talk about this new development. So I'm sure you guys are wildly busy during this period, so thank you for joining us. Would you mind starting by telling us a little bit about your experience launching both a brand new commodity future exchange and clearinghouse at the same time as you're introducing a new commodity benchmark to the market?
A difficult process, Jessica. And if you look back at history and look at how many new exchanges, futures exchanges, certainly there are a lot of exchanges out there. I'll use air quotes. But you know, when you look at futures exchanges, regulated futures exchanges, and new commodity clearinghouses, they haven't really come about after it's just the incumbents that are out there. And so from a clearinghouse perspective, that's really the keys to the marketplace, the real central risk management tool of an exchange, a regulated exchange. The last time someone was built from the ground up that's focusing on commodities and launched hasn't happened in over two decades. So it is rare. A lot of people forget how hard it is to build this and to launch it, let alone the products that come along with it. So you know, when we started the project over 6 years ago, we knew it was going to take a long time. We knew that the product sets in the original products that we launched with an LNG and carbon and battery metals were important to the marketplace. Certainly things evolve and change over those 6 years. But I think if we look back and say, did we do the right thing from a product perspective? Yeah, we can emphatically say yes. And then as things change, more products come to light that need better credit and risk mitigation tools that haven't been developed by the existing exchanges. And that's really where we see the opening for ourselves. We saw this years ago, and we see it still today, where there's an opportunity to bring better risk management tools, better technology to the marketplace that hasn't been addressed by the existing exchanges. So when we talk to customers, they say, we don't see innovation. We don't see innovation in products. We don't see innovation in better collateral management tools. And that's really what we focused on from the beginning. And we see that opportunity is still there as we progress through both our launch last June and then the recently launched products in battery metals, and certainly more to come too.
So you often talk about this idea of a smarter market. What does that mean to you in practice?
Yeah, a lot of it is still developing, but we're native cloud-based. So we started developing our exchange and clearinghouse as a cloud-based entity. The incumbent exchanges are still trying to get there. We've been there from day one. And really, what does that mean? It gives better solutions in managing collateral management, as I said, also managing the trades every day of risk and clearing of the customer's positions. Ultimately, with some of the tools that we will be rolling out here over the next few months and weeks, and the marketplace will see the better way to manage their risk in these marketplaces. And that's really what we talk about in smarter markets. It's better products. It's more innovative products. It's better tools for risk management, better tools for collateral management, all the things that come with the needs of a regulated futures market.
Well, thanks, Joe. And Sasha, now looking at you, looking at the products that you put out since the beginning of this year. So like in January, nickel sulfur futures that have been introduced, and then the lithium carbonate futures have been introduced recently this month. So can I ask you, why did you choose specifically the lithium carbonate and the nickel sulfate? And what actually made you choose these compounds and not maybe another one?
It's been two separate processes. We started as a first product for the battery suite of products to develop a nickel contract. And this really came pretty closely after the big Tsingshan short and the subsequent squeeze on LME, where we've actually really been approached by a lot of participants in the market who knew that we're going to launch a new exchange and said, why don't you do anything on nickel? And that's how we build our contracts, everything we do, by talking to the industry, you know, getting out there to conferences, calling up people, meeting people in their offices, trying to understand where the pain points are and what we could do differently. And out of this, really, as of, let's say, when it was at summer, autumn 22, we started embarking on trying to see what we can do on nickel. And the result of this industry-wide consultation phase was really the nickel sulfate contract. And once we had that, and actually maybe a year later, we started thinking, you know, what else could we do? And then we started exactly with the same approach, looked at lithium, talked to lithium producers, consumers, and traders alike, and then came up with the solution for lithium carbonate. So for both products, you don't have a physically deliverable contract. And this is really our mantra, you know, where we have cash settled contract in the case, obviously, of lithium. You have markets physically deliverable for nickel, but we thought, you know, the nickel sulfate is just really a new product which the market needs, and it's not physically deliverable in the state of nickel sulfate. So that's basically how we started these contracts.
Okay, and like looking a little bit about the ABAX battery metal contracts that are complementing or supplementing the current tools for traders. So what are the commercial advantages?
So the commercial advantages are really that you have for the first time now the option as a producer and consumer alike to pick up material or deliver physically nickel sulfate or lithium carbonate to the market. So it's a buyer and seller of last resort. We looked at the structure of delivery. We have a direct delivery mechanism where buyers and sellers are met at destination. We have, in the case of nickel sulfate, a Singapore contract. In the case of lithium carbonate, we have three contracts, Singapore, Baltimore, and Rotterdam alike. So it can really be used as a buyer and seller of last resort, where excess volume can be placed through the exchange by putting on a short, and it creates an alternative sourcing mechanism to get hold of nickel sulfate or lithium carbonate.
And lastly, so when you have like traders that are active either in the physical and in the futures market, they often talk about how it actually helps them to optimize their supply chain or optimize their infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So optimization here is the key word. So in very simple terms, what does it mean for the people who aren't either traders or the people who are not in the battery metals industry, but they haven't taken the advantages of a futures market before?
First and foremost, this is a risk management tool. You know, that's how futures are used by the industry to hedge positions. For producers to maybe forward hedge if they like the price, for a consumer to fix price, you know, a range of products which they have to offer to the market for consecutive 5-6 years, they can fix price that by putting on hedges. But then when you get into the middle and really in the sweet spot of that industry where traders and processors are involved, they get a tool now into their hands where they cannot only use it as a risk management tool for hedging, but they also get the chance to physically deliver against a short, which they don't have to buy back and don't lose money, or pick up material against a long when they cannot source in maybe distressed markets. So it really creates an alternative tool for the whole supply chain. And by creating those lithium carbonate and nickel sulfate contracts according to the specifications, which we've defined widely with the industry, to make sure it can be used by a big number of consumers and producers alike, and really creates this additional opportunity for sourcing and supplying physical units apart from the pure risk management tool, which is traditionally financially settled.
Sasha, Jo, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for this week. Make sure to subscribe by clicking the subscribe button on wherever you get your podcast. Also, make sure to follow us on LinkedIn or get signed up to our app, FIS Live, to make sure you never miss any freight and quality analysis from FIS. Thank you again for joining us, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with a freight and commodity podcast.
Freight up. Bye-bye.
Freight up.